They are proud moments of stress and anticipation with all of the sticker shock of an unexpected five-figure bill from the IRS. Launching kids into college has become like buying a house. You've got the big debt, the monthly payments. You've got the question, will the investment hold its value? But there's no actual house, just your kids' abstract future. This difficult moment has been complicated by a steep rise in tuition and stiff competition between top and mid-tier schools, all vying for the top grads. The College Board reports that right now $23,500 per year is a moderate college budget for an in-state public college, while more than $46,000 is a moderate private college. It's estimated that three-quarters of students from private nonprofit colleges are graduating with debt, while it's 88% of students graduating from for-profit colleges. And they're in the red on an average of $30,000. For the past few days, you've been sending in your questions about how to pay for college, questions about how to budget, where to save your money, what loans to take out, how to think about paying off your student debt. Beth Kobliner is the author of Get a Financial Life, Personal Finance in Your 20s and 30s. She's currently writing a new book, Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not. Thanks so much for helping us out again, Beth.
Great to see you, John.
It's great to talk to you. So we've got tons of questions. People love this subject, and they have lots and lots of questions. Let me just start you off with a typical one.
Good.
This is Holly in Portland, Oregon, and we've got two children, 11 and 8, and each have about $60,000 so far put away in some 529 plans. And we're just wondering, assuming if they go away to state college or just living on campus on a regular in-state tuition type situation, how much will they need? We think that might only handle about a half of it.
$60K. How's Holly doing there?
First of all, great. Congratulations, Holly. Yeah. That means, and you're, she's saving in a 529, which is a great way to save for college, because colleges don't necessarily take all that money when they see it's in a 529. They only expect you to contribute about 5 to 6% of it. So that's a good thing. Chances are, looking at the numbers, she probably is right. She'll probably have to save about double that. But that's only to pay for the full cost. Holly, depending upon her situation, may get financial aid. Mm-hmm. A lot of people sort of don't think about that. They look at the sticker price of the school, and they're not realizing that there are all kinds of aid that they may be eligible for, including low-cost federal student loans, which really are, you know, basically a necessity these days. And you should anticipate that your kids are going to be taking out these federal student loans, not the private loans that are way more expensive, but the federal student loans.
Are there in-state situations that are particularly good or discounted in-state school situations?
Yes. On average, in-state schools cost about $20,000 per year, for including tuition, room, and board. If you're going to a state school but out of state, it's probably about $30,000 mm-hmm. on average, and it can be quite a bit more than that. So staying within state certainly makes more sense. But within state, remember, there's more than just the one big state school. There are also smaller schools, smaller state schools, and even community colleges, which have gotten some mixed feelings about, but still community colleges are often a very good way for someone who's very ambitious and motivated. You start there for 2 years, you do well, and then you can transfer if you sort of really are determined to keep your costs low and graduate from a four-year school.
On the in-state issue, the California discount that used to be the case when I was little no longer is the case if you're out of state, right?
Out of state, it's really expensive.
Really expensive.
Really expensive. And those schools are facing horrible budget, you know, crunches on top of everything else. So, but it is tricky, but you have to really be very good at doing your research now because there's so many options in-state, out of state.
Speaking of California.
Hi, this is Andrew from California. I was just wondering, with the changes in everything, healthcare and also saving and interest, what's a good monthly and annual investment for a newborn in 2015 to pay for all their college's costs and all their college expenses, books and everything, based on current rates and assumed inflation?
First, let's congratulate Andrew on the birth.
On the baby. Congratulations.
Yes, sounds like it. Yeah. So what do you think?
He seems a little stressed out, I got to say. You know, the new baby on the way, and it's great that he's thinking about college, but I would say to him as a sounding like a new young parent, first save in your 401k if you have one at work, if it has matching, and open a Roth IRA, because he should be saving for his retirement before college. maxing out of your retirement plans really is very important. But if he has enough and he wants to save beyond that for college, putting money into a 529 plan, again, he could shop around. It doesn't have to be his own state 529 plan, but a plan that he likes. And NerdWallet, which is a personal finance website, ran some numbers, and they said if you had a newborn, you'd have to save about $4,000 a year starting when he's born in order to have enough for and investing it. They're assuming a 7% rate of return to have enough for a kid's college. We're talking about, again, public colleges. But it really depends upon, again, where you are, where your kid is at that point. And I would say you can borrow for college, at least to some extent. You don't want to borrow a huge amount, and it's great for him to save. But first, you can't borrow for retirement. And I know the last thing on his mind as a new father is retirement, but he has to start thinking about 20, 30, 40 years down the road to save that money first in those retirement plans.
Let's get those accounts sorted out here. Here's another question from a listener.
Hi, this is Deirdre from Glenwood Landing. I am confused about financial aid. People have told me that you should not put too much money in your children's name, like in a 529, because you'll get less financial aid. And my second question is financial aid based on how much you make or how much you have saved?
Income versus assets. Let's go. The 529 you mentioned, Roth IRAs.
Right.
Go through that list again.
Okay. So for 529 plans, it's a great question. The first answer is yes, you should save, despite what people are telling you, because some of that information is wrong. In a 529 plan, the college, whether you're saving the money in your name or your kid's name in a 529 plan, the college will only expect you to contribute about 5.6% of that money toward college costs. And that's a pretty good deal. So if the choice is, should I save nothing and have zero or have quite a bit of money and only contribute a certain amount that will be held against me for financial aid, the answer is save in a 529 plan. Now, for 401ks and IRAs, the federal FAFSA, the Federal Student Aid Form, does not look at the money you have saved in those, in the 401k and the IRA. But if you withdraw the money to pay for kids' college from those accounts, that will count against you as income, which could be very high. So that's why when you're thinking about college costs, you really want to, for your own sake, you know, backtrack for 1 second, save in the retirement plans for your own retirement. But also, if you can, save in the 529 plans as good vehicles for your college savings. And we haven't said the great thing about 529s, your money grows in this tax-favored way. And that's the real advantage of those plans. So save in the 529, whether it's in your name or your kid's name, it won't hurt you a huge amount when it comes to financial aid.
And here's a question which gives an indication that a lot of people get a lot of stories, a lot of advice, and a lot of it's not necessarily good. Listen to this.
Hi, this is Catherine. We were told not to save in a 529 plan because that money would be earmarked for our kids' education, and then they would spend it and it would be gone. We were advised instead to invest in real estate, save the money that we would be putting into an account for a down payment, and then as our children grew up, take the equity out again by the time they were college ready, and we would still have the underlying asset. Is this something that you recommend?
That sounds like advice from a real estate
agent. I was just going to say that. First of all, with real estate, you have no idea. Will it go up? Will it go down? Will it even, you know, that? So that's one thing that concerned me. Now, with a 529, you have to invest it wisely and you have to be careful. But I would say, again, if you were to take that money, as she was saying, if that money comes into you as income, that is held against you when you apply for financial aid as well. So sort of the very smart thing to do if you're a person who wants to save for your kids' college is start in these 529 plans. Look for 529 plans that have low fees, and it's really a good way to start thinking about how to save money for your kids' future, even if you are going to qualify for financial aid. And remember, many families do get financial aid. And that brings up one other quick point I wanted to make. People get so overwhelmed by the sticker price, and some people say, I'm just not going to do anything at all. And that's a real mistake. You want to save. You want to think about. And even some studies show that when you save for a kid's college and you talk to your kid about saving, there's research that shows that kids are more likely to go to college when they know they have some money that's set aside for them for college.
That's interesting. Let me ask you one question about the sticker price issue. Should parents be realistic and basically sit down, look at the tuition prices of schools, and basically rule out schools that are obviously way too expensive and have their kids only apply to schools that are reasonable? Or should your kids basically, you know, shoot for the stars?
Right. I think it's a great question. I think it's somewhere in between. I think in the olden days, say 20 years ago, we'd say, well, apply where you are and we'll figure it out. And we'll people just sort of assumed it would work itself out. Today, the costs are so expensive that it can be overwhelming. What you should do as a family is there's a great tool called the FAFSA Forecaster. It's the government tool. You could look at it, FAFSA.gov. And basically, it gives you an estimate. You can plug in some numbers and get an estimate of what your family's estimated contribution will be. Now, of course, the numbers will change. And if your kids are still younger, you have many more years to go. But it gives you some sort of sense. And then you look at the colleges and you, I believe that a kid should apply, but the family has to start talking to a kid as early as ninth grade about, you know what, we want you to do as well as you can. We're going to send you to a school, but we're going to have to look at all the offers. And you know something? There are a lot of great schools out there. So we're going to weigh all of this in terms of affordability for us. We don't want you to be burdened with huge amounts of student loans. On average, kids graduate with $30,000 in student loans, which is sort of to be expected now. 70% of kids graduate college with student loans. So anticipate the student loans. The other thing I would say is there is a lot of panic around all this. And I fear that there's so much fear and a little bit of a buzz about, well, don't even go to college because look at Mark Zuckerberg. He didn't go to college and look how well he did. There's a real, that's sort of a growing undercurrent and people talk like that. And I would just say, if you look at the numbers, on average, people who graduate from college earn somewhere between $300,000 to $800,000 more over their lifetimes. So go to college.
And Zuckerberg was at Harvard
exactly.
when he dropped out.
Exactly. So, he was screened. He got into Harvard and then he dropped out. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. All right. The government has a forecasting tool that you've just referred to. They certainly are behind a lot of the student loans that we talked about. The government holds a lot of cards, which brings up this question.
I'm just wondering what, if any, new legislation regarding student loans has happened. You know, I hear a lot of conversation about it on different media, but I'm not sure that anything has actually changed. So I'd love to know if there's actually any new legislation that would help students.
Is the playing field changing at all?
You know, there actually is. There have been some good developments. First of all, every year there's a new interest, there's sort of announced the new interest rate on it's called the direct student loan. It used to be called the Stafford student loan when I was going to college, but now it's called the direct student loan, and the interest rate is 4.6% now, which is pretty good. But a lot of the change also has occurred in the repayment options, and so many young people who graduate don't know about it, but there are some really good options. The standard repayment is you pay back over 10 years, but then there's something called pay as you earn, that if you qualify for it, you can pay as a percentage of your earnings, and then there's graduated repayment plans. And some of these plans, the way it works, you know, with the income contingent ones in particular, after a certain number of years, your debt is totally forgiven. So there's another good calculator that the government puts out, studentaid.gov/repayment estimator.
Ah.
And it's a great tool. And it's relatively new. And basically, you put in how much student loans you have, and then it tells you which payment plan is good for you. So I highly recommend anyone who has kids, parents who are worried about their kids' debt load, tell them to check that out.
Sounds like this listener could have used that tool.
Hey, this is Sarah from Atlanta. I'm a recent graduate just out of college, and my student loan payback plan is now about $250 a month. And some months it can be a bit steep for me. So my question is, what are the repercussions of not being able to pay back your loans on time every month?
Well, you got to. You know, you really have to pay them back. Again, you can look at to see whether you're eligible. There's one plan called the graduated repayment plan that you could stretch it out over 30 years, which means, of course, you'll be paying back more interest, but it makes it manageable for people. You have to pay back your loans. And if there's some problem you're having, that there are options. If you're out of work, you might be able to defer your loans for a few years. But a large percentage of people do default. And the problem is, when that happens, that it stays on your credit report for many, many years. That affects any kinds of other loans you can get in the future. So I would just highly, you know, recommend figuring out a way to make those payments or adjust them if possible.
You know, this whole issue of indebtedness relates to a couple of questions. We got this from a number of people, but I'll just characterize one sample. Here's somebody who says, will I be able to pay off my own debt? I have only 4 years until my own children will be in college, and I'm still paying for my own student loans. Is there any forgiveness for a situation where you're paying on your loans and you're taking more debt for your kids?
Yeah, unfortunately not. My doctor told me a few years ago he had just finished paying off his loans and his kid was starting college. That was his medical school loans. It can be very expensive, and I think the only answer I can say is don't not pay your loans. You want to pay your loans. And it's sort of a wake-up call, I think, for parents and kids looking at colleges now. You have to be really proactive. Going into huge amounts of debt for a school that may not even be right for you or you might not even graduate from doesn't make sense. We have to be much more driven when it comes to finding affordable schools.
Is there something crazy, though, and this is another listener question, is there something crazy about someone with no credit history, an 18-year-old, taking out a loan all of a sudden to go to school, $150,000?
Well, that's unusual. You know, and the media certainly talks about it, but people are, you know, on this show, we once talked to someone, I remember this a few years ago, each had $100,000 in student debt and they were book illustrators and they didn't know how they were going to pay it back. You know, it can be very difficult. I think that you want to take a breath when you're applying, think about federal student loans. Now, the limit, there's a limit on how much you can get with federal student loans, and cumulative loan debt you can take in federal student loans is $23,000 over that 4 years of college. And I think, you know, kids are graduating right now with on average about $33,000 in student loans. Once you start getting above that, you really have to think long and hard, does this make sense? Are there other schools that will make it much easier for my kid to go to school, which may not be exactly their first choice, but there may be some programs that are even better for my kid. It takes a lot of research, and I think we're just beginning to come around to that now as people, you know, people research so much to buy a computer or to buy a car, but college really hasn't gotten as much attention when it comes to not only shopping around for a number of schools that might be well-suited for you and your family, and when I say family, meaning affordability, but also looking for low-cost loans and starting with the FAFSA form and the federal loans, which are much lower cost. Because once you start getting into those private loans for undergraduate, it can get very expensive and the repayment plans can be much more difficult to pay back.
Looking back on your experience, was it worth it? Was college worth it? Did you have a good strategy?
I did. I mean, what happened, my parents, what they said was, I had a choice of going to the local Queens College, a local city college, actually.
Right.
Or they said, if you got into one of the top Ivy League schools, and this is 100 years ago, and nobody really did this back then, we'll scrimp and save and we'll figure out a way to pay for it. So I got into Brown. And that was, you know, I took out loans and I had every student job there was. And, you know, my parents really did scrimp and save to send me there. For me personally, it was an amazing experience. I think I would have gotten a great education, though, if I would have gone to Queens College as well. So I think that it really is a question. I was the youngest in my family. I was the last to go so they could spring for me. But it's a question on a family's, you know, trade-offs. And I think those questions have to be asked. And sometimes it is worth it. And sometimes maybe going into debt. I mean, I graduated from college with $20,000 in debt, which was huge at the time. Nobody had that. But now that's, you know, nothing. So I think families have to have these conversations. And I think they have to start early, but not freak out your kid that they're so worried about how much it'll cost that they don't want to go at all.
All right. Beth Kobliner, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Beth Kobliner is author of Get a Financial Life, Personal Finance in Your 20s and 30s. She's a member of the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capability for Young Americans. Beth's tips and links to some of those websites she mentioned, you can find at thetakeaway.org.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo. Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.